episode 68 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded February 10th, 2016. The birds and the bees.
Rats and the bees.
Oh, the rats and the bees. Rats and the bees.
You know the old saying about the guy sit the kid down, talk about the rat. Oh, you didn't educate your kid in sex education in New York.
No.
In New York, it's the rats and the
bees. That's so disgusting.
Because pigeons are flying rats.
Yeah, there's rats everywhere. They're in the air. They're under the ground.
Ah.
Yeah, so rats and the bees is a New York thing.
That's gross.
Yeah, Greg will back me up on
this,
right?
Yeah, you're 100% right.
So this week we're talking about a new show from Samantha Bee, Full Frontal, over on TBS. Which,
yep.
Hey, TBS is kicking up some new shows, huh?
They are.
And we're also going to be talking about a new show over on HBO called Animals.
Yep.
Which doesn't actually feature birds. It features rats in the first episode.
Right.
So that's our title.
Yep.
And in addition, I think we're going to go ahead and check on
Always
FX.
Sunny.
Always Sunny?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk
check
about them
on
a little
Always
bit.
Sunny. Mm-hmm.
But before we get into all that, we're the TV Dudes.
Yeah.
I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Greg.
And we have a little bit of housekeeping to do.
Always.
And first up, we want to talk to you, the listeners. We got a little bit of an important announcement to make. We have been doing this show for how long? 5 years? A little bit over 5 years?
Five, like 100. Six,
going on 6.
10,
it was like
150.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
I just meant tonight. It feels like 100 years we've been doing this show.
So we've been doing this for a while, and we have found that one of the best ways for us to actually boost our visibility is to pimp this thing called iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you listeners, this must be a little bit tedious for you to have to hear this, but it is really actually important for us.
Yep.
And it's a free thing, and that's why we like to really encourage this for our listeners. It's one of those things like we're providing a bit of content that I guess if you're mm-hmm. listening to us and if you're listening to us regularly, we have to assume that you like it. And,
yeah.
And you don't have to give us anything. It's a free show. But if you do want to be helpful, step up and like actually support us, go to iTunes, log in, make an account, and write us a review and give us a 5-star review, rating rather. And that really does actually help us out. It gains us visibility. It gives us a bigger market. And we continue to grow our audience that way.
You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I listen in the car. So I'll get, they'll ask for iTunes reviews.
Yeah.
And I always forget. I've been forgetting. So finally, like last week, I made a point. Now, when I got home, I got on iTunes and reviewed a bunch of shows at the same mm-hmm. time.
Oh, did
so
you?
Yeah. If you listen to a bunch of shows, and I'm guessing if you listen to podcasts, you listen to more than one.
Yes.
Just think about it. Keep it in your head. And the next time you're at your computer or your iPad or whatever, go to iTunes and review like 3 or 4 shows. Review us. Review some other shows. We'll all appreciate it. You'll get a karmic bump. It's good for everybody. And if you don't have an iTunes account and you're like, oh, what a pain. I don't want an iTunes account.
Right.
I get it. But if you get an iTunes account, you don't have any free TV shows they put on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first episode of every sci-fi show
goes on iTunes.
And the first episode of lots of other shows. If you want to check a lot of stuff out for free, get on iTunes and check out their new TV every week.
And that's how I got into Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
I watched it free on iTunes. And because before you hear a show on a USA, it's like USA new show.
USA, forget about it.
Okay, USA new show, Christian Slater. Why should I watch this? But then it was like free on iTunes. I'm like, okay, and clicked it down. And
it's
I was
funny
like,
that Christian Slater's like, no, that's a detractor.
It is a detractor for a lot of guys.
I'm not even going to watch that now.
Like the Magicians that we talked about,
yep.
that's on iTunes for free, the first episode.
We actually haven't discussed this.
Have we not discussed the Magicians?
No. I gotta watch it.
The Magicians we haven't talked about?
No.
That's on iTunes for free.
Yeah.
All right.
Will talk about? Yeah.
Yeah, so please go do that. If in the event still iTunes just doesn't work out for you, you guys can always go over to Stitcher.com.
Mm-hmm.
And make an account really quickly and write us a review there. That also would help us out.
Yes.
By the way, if by some chance you hate us and you're still listening to every episode for some reason,
why?
Then go write us a 5-star review and tell us how much you hate us in the review. I mean, as long as we get the 5 stars, I'd be really curious to hear from someone who's every episode just, oh, I hate these guys. Oh, I hate them. We'll listen to the next episode.
Man, they really hate us.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
I wanna know if that's true.
You hate listening to us?
I'm not so sure I want that.
I do. I want to know if there's somebody out there hate listening.
What is this liquid coming out of my eyes? okay, but thank you guys very much for all the of you that have already done that. And once again, yeah, iTunes, go give us a review. Helps us out. We didn't get any this week, and we didn't get any of the past 2 weeks, which is why we're kind of campaigning a little heavily.
The iTunes cupboard is bare.
Yeah.
Yes.
Once again, you guys can also go to patreon.com/TVDudes, and if you feel like it, you can kick us a couple bucks, give us a dollar an episode. And that's also very helpful. We appreciate it. We take that money, and we roll it into going to the ATX Fest, which is a television fest here in Austin, or trying to attend other festivities. We don't actually take that money for anything other than that.
Right.
All money goes back into the show.
And Grant, we appreciate it. Are you going to mention the Patreon bonus that we might be offering up?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I think I mentioned that in the last week's episode, and I just haven't posted it yet.
Okay.
But we have been doing some political discussion.
Yes.
I'm a little nervous because I think this could also ostracize some listeners who might not have the same political leanings as us.
You don't have to listen to it.
No, you do not. And I will note that, hey, we are three guys from Austin, Texas, which is very liberal, and we're discussing the liberal side of politics, and if that's not your cup of tea... Please, by all means, don't listen to it.
Yeah, we are trying to be respectful to the other sides.
I don't know if we are.
I am. I've got friends of mine who are
Greg
conservatives.
Greg, I tried.
Greg, you participated in our conversation. Oh, yeah. Were we fully respectful? I don't know.
No, well, we try. I'm saying we try.
Okay. Anyway, those are going to be going up over on Patreon for those of you that have been giving us donations. And once again, thank you guys very much. We're going to move on to some listener questions.
Cool.
So if you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, we put out a weekly call for these questions, and you guys have come through valiantly. Our first question comes from Kyle Volte, who says, "Hey, TV dudes of most high renown."
Wow, I love that. Thanks, Kyle.
"Having watched The People versus O.J. Simpson, remembering some of the TV dramatizations about the murders and subsequent trial, I was wondering how much time has to pass before you can make a good show about a real event?"
This is a good question, because I think if it's less than, I want to say less than 2 years, it's a Lifetime movie or something like that. It's there's a certain stain on them. If you're doing, you can do stuff that's like ripped from the headlines or whatever, but then you're on Lifetime or you're on Court TV or whatever.
Yeah. Ripped from the headlines is usually that you take creative license, kind of mold it into your narrative. Like CSI does it all the time.
Yeah,
like
so does Law and Order. Yeah. They coined the term, I think.
Yeah.
But I think 2 years, at least 2 years. And I think ideally you want like 5 or 10.
It's gotta kind of resonate with the culture. You're gonna have to have some distance from it. And it usually takes like a smart think piece about it, or a revisiting of the incident, or to look at it in a different way, or new information comes out, which, you know, kind of changes the way the incident happens. I think that's how it's successful, and I think 2 years just isn't enough time. Where
you want to be able to get all the resources, really. Yeah. I kind of understand. Yeah. Like if we think about the recent true crime like surge, we have Serial, we have Making a Murderer. Yep. Both of those
like
had
10 years
at least 10 years old.
Yeah.
The second season of Serial is a little bit more fresh. It's talking about Bo Bergdahl, and he was recently released. But you also have the initial incident occurring, I think, in like 2009 or 2009. So that was 5 years, 2014, and so. And there's been a little bit of reticence, actually, toward the episode, because this is an ongoing trial.
Yeah, I think anything that's still 5 years or less, maybe even 5 to 10, you're going to have the emotional component to it. You're going to have the bit stuff being too raw, and not all the facts will have come out. Like, all the facts that will not have come out yet.
Do you think, like movies like Moneyball or something that like are kind of like talking about real life events?
They're not as charged. Like Moneyball isn't as charged a thing.
No.
You know what was a good one that a lot of people that came out, I guess it came out about, I don't know, 8 years ago, was Recount. Recount was on HBO. Kevin Spacey was part of it, which I think he got his presidential bug from. And again, if you know, in 2000, that was the recount with the Bush versus Gore situation. And I remember who was it that played the woman from Florida?
Oh no,
the woman from Florida. She was what was the actress's name? She was awesome in it.
Huh. It's an HBO movie, right?
It was HBO
still on
movie.
HBO, I believe. If you have HBO now, you can watch it right now.
Yeah, it's that was really good. And I think that came out like, I want to say like 8 years later or something like that.
I think basically you want to be in that 5 to 10 year bubble at least. And I think the further you are away from it, the better it is because the more information you'll have.
And also,
I thought it was pretty remarkable with HBO. They did that Game Change thing, which was about Sarah Palin.
Yeah,
that one too.
And that was about 4 years. That was 2012. Yeah. And that was 4 years earlier.
What helps is that these are all usually around books.
Yeah.
And so when you got like a really good book, and you just basically dramatized the book. Most of that work, Recount came out in 2008.
It's been researched and vetted. And
so
that kind of thing.
Sometimes I think you can get away with it if maybe that's even more and more like more our modern culture as we become more info junkies.
Yeah.
We're kind of able to process it a little bit easier. Like, hey, this just happened a little bit ago, and now you're making a movie about it. But I think there still needs to be a degree of sensitivity at least.
It's funny because I'm looking at this other one that. Again, I don't know, Kevin Spacey's, you know, I'd love to interview him about this stuff. He did Casino Jack, too, which is about Jack Abramoff, that whole thing.
You know, the thing is, I think there's a different scale.
Yeah.
I think murder, you got to live a little more time for, as opposed to something like politics that is so exposed and so analyzed that there's less of a time gap.
But even the big Oscar movie that came out,
The Big Short.
Not The Big Short, the other one, about the Boston Globe one, which I can't remember the name of.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, which wasn't, that wasn't that long ago, but in their the coverage of the sex scandal in Boston, I guess, was mid-2000s.
Yeah.
But that's
15 years ago.
Yeah,
that's 10
right.
years, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, well, let's move on from that question. That was a good question.
Yeah, good question, Kyle.
This one comes from Chris Hatfield, who says, warning. Super quick and nerd question, so I'm guessing
listening.
This is coming to Randy. CW/CBS just announced a spring crossover of Flash and Supergirl.
Yes, they did.
So is Supergirl a part of CW Earth One universe or another universe that is part of the 52 universes? We just got a mild Easter egg in episode 13 of Flash, but what does the brief image of Supergirl in the portal mean? Is it an image of ongoing events in Earth One or a peek into an alternate universe? Curious to hear the TV Dude speculation. Now I'm going to watch my head explode from using so many question marks.
All right. So here's the deal. I don't know. I haven't talked to Greg Berlanti. I don't know for sure. But here's how I read it. Because Supergirl is on CBS and Flash is on CW, despite them sharing a executive producer and a lot of sort of talent, I believe that they are not going to be on the same Earth. I think that's just untenable. Also because then you have to say, oh, well, why isn't Superman showing up on The Flash or Arrow? Why don't they ever talk about Superman and Batman, that kind of thing? So I believe that Supergirl is essentially going to be Earth 3. She is a separate Earth.
Is Earth 3 common in the DC-verse?
DC has 52 Earths.
Oh, so that's what the 52?
Yeah. It used to have a multiverse of... It used to be an infinite universe, and then they had the crisis on infinite Earths, and it was compressed down to one Earth, and then they opened things back up during the 52 to 52.
Why did they open
universes.
To 52? Because there's 52 weeks in a year?
Because Dan DiDio likes 52 for some reason.
52 weeks in a year.
52 weeks in the year. They did a series called 52 that was a weekly series, and for some reason, the number 52... Like someone thinks it has some kind of shamanic power because if you notice, and you won't be able to not see it now, it's everywhere. Like it's DC News, like it's News 52 on every one of their channels. Like the room where Max is keeping spoiler Bizarro is in like room 52. Like
so
52
is their Valenzetti.
Yes,
equation.
Yes, it is. It is everywhere in the DC universe in all their spinoff stuff. So that's why. But to answer his question about the look into Supergirl, that was a tease for all the fans. That was him passing by another universe. The interesting thing is there were a ton of Easter eggs in this episode. Even just in that Speed Force sequence, we saw Jonah Hex.
I haven't seen this episode
yet. We saw the Legion flight ring. We saw a few other things.
What's the Legion flight ring?
Legion of Superheroes, the 31st century superheroes.
Okay.
So there was all kinds of nods. This episode was, to me, the best episode of the season so far. They went to Earth 2.
Awesome.
And
I'm super excited
about it.
Well, we've seen glimpses of Earth 2 because that's where
Yeah, but we haven't actually been there.
Okay, yeah.
So they went there, and we saw...
Is this kind of like when Fringe jumped to their Earth 2 kind of thing? Like, and you're like, well, look at all the differences.
Yeah, they definitely did that. Hmm. There's...
they had a red arrow and a red lantern.
There's doppelgangers of the main all the main characters.
Yeah.
You know how Joe is an Emmy nominated, or is he a Tony winner singer?
Oh, the other guy.
In this
singing?
Universe, he's a lounge singer. So they had him sing, which was amazing. They did a great job with Iris. They brought back I don't want to spoil too much for Grant, but they brought back a face from Arrow I was not expecting to see in a really good comedic role.
I watch Arrow, so it's not going to spoil anything for me.
Deadshot's in there.
Okay.
And he's a cop, and the gag is that he's super, he can't hit a thing in this. Like, he's like a fumbling Barney Fife type. And
he has terrible acting.
And when Barry goes to his phone, because he goes to his house in Earth 2, the speed dial on his phone, all the stuff is like old 50s looking cars and 50 looking phones and all that kind of stuff. So they're definitely playing with Justice Society and how that was always the world of the 40s and all that kind of stuff. But it's a modern era. But his phone has all these little speed dial buttons on them, and the names on those speed dials were so awesome. I might have actually exclaimed, "Holy shit!"
Wow.
It's all just an Easter egg. Like, I don't think it's going to mean anything, but there were so many cool moments.
Well, let me ask you then. Yes. I have another question from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi, dudes. Seeing Killer Frost and Deathstorm in the latest episode of The Flash was such a delight for me.
Yep.
What are your guys' favorite evil doppelgangers in TV?" I'm guessing this is going to apply right now for you. Right.
Yes. Well, I mean, I saw this question earlier.
Oh, and he says, "Back to you, ABC 10 anchor Tim Daly in Sacramento." that's for you, Greg.
Yeah, I know.
I saw this episode earlier, so I decided to do a little research. Mm-hmm. So I went to TV Tropes and looked up evil twins.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my favorite evil doppelganger is Walter Bishop's from Fringe.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Flock. I'm sorry, Flock? Evil Locke.
Oh boy,
which is his doppelganger in Lost.
I like Evil Willow from Buffy. That was a ton of fun.
Willow.
Yes. She doesn't have a name.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't have a name. And then of course there's all the Star Trek evil twins, that kind of thing. But when I was researching this, just to see, maybe there's some I've forgotten. Apparently there's an episode of The Dukes of Hazzard called Ba Ba White Sheep. Introduces Boss Hogg's good twin. Would anyone like to guess the name of Boss Hogg's good twin?
I don't know.
You're never gonna get it.
Good pig? I don't know.
Abraham Lincoln Hogg.
What the fuck?
Yes.
That's awesome. I would never thought that.
That is awesome on a lot of levels.
Yes. It says here the twins' parents must have foreseen how their sons would have turned out. Astute viewers will recognize the twins are named after Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis, the presidents of the Union and Confederacy, respectively, during the American Civil War.
Yeah, that is.
That's amazing. And that is now my favorite evil twin, because I don't know if anything could ever beat that.
What about... Evil Troy and Abed in the Morning.
Yeah, that's another favorite one.
Wait, wasn't there one with not the $6 Million Man, or is there one? No, there was one with something from the '80s. I can see it. Knight Rider? Was there one with
Knight Rider had an evil twin?
Yeah, I thought so.
Alias also did a great job with evil twins, because it was actually different characters. Francie had an evil like version, like somehow they mind swapped her or something, like she took over her body or something, and she was great. She was great playing an evil character.
All right, well, let's move on to our next question. Zach McLernan says, "Really loved this past season of Transparent, but couldn't help but notice that the people on the show are all more or less terrible people."
Yep.
Right.
"In your opinion, of the three siblings, who is the worst? I rank them from least to worst. The brother, the older sister, and then the younger sister is the worst, I guess, with an honorary mention to the mom."
I love the mom.
Now, Greg, you've seen much more of Transparent than the rest of us for season 2.
Oh, easily the younger sister. She's like...
just so selfish.
She's so selfish, so like the wrong type of idealist.
You're talking about Gabby?
Gabby.
Yeah.
They are all... the acting is great, but as far as... like the characters and people,
she's also the most immature and like
selfish, unrealistic, just just doesn't work, you know, that doesn't contribute anything.
I mean, they're all going through identity issues,
yeah,
I thought that the son, the other Duplass brother,
yeah.
I thought that he's kind of terrible.
Well, he's terrible.
He's just a shitty person to other people because he's so self-absorbed.
But he was he was damaged, though. He was
They all were.
He was molested
because
by
I feel like Gabby Hoffman character, she at least shows a bigger degree of compassion towards people occasionally. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she's just kind of flighty and mm-hmm. Whatever.
Well, I mean, if you look at their grievances or what they've done. I mean, the older sister basically blew up her family for some crazy lesbian.
Yep,
not a good thing.
And then in season two, she blows that up.
Then the brother, let's see, all he does is have sex with these young girls in his band. So he's basically using his power to assign people to deal with young women.
And then he mistreats Catherine Hahn's character, and that's unforgivable.
And then he also has his son, this weird-ass son, because he still goes and sees that his babysitter. And then you've got the daughter what's his name? The main character.
Jeffrey Tambor.
Who got Jeffrey Tambor so mad, he yelled in like... You know, now that I'm a father, I hope I will never yell at Ellington like that. But the way he yelled at her, I was like, my father and I, he's never yelled at me like that.
You will yell to save their life. You will yell because they took your breakfast taco. Yep. You will yell for a lot of things.
But I mean, but the way he just, it was so visceral.
Exhaustion will get to you.
So visceral and so like insulting and just like, because you did it, brother. You could take the money. I do everything for you. I mean, it's just like, and he's saying all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a second, man. You've changed their lives and you've put them in bad positions. And what do you expect? You know, I don't know. But I would definitely say her. But I think it just depends on the episode, really.
Yeah. All right. Well, next question comes from Dennis McWayne. He says, I've started watching Z Nation recently and it is far better than Walking Dead.
What?
Can you guys think of another show that is better than the more expensive similar shows? And then he says, insert conspiracy theory here.
Z Nation, what is that on?
I don't know. I haven't heard of Z Nation.
I've heard of it. I don't remember where it's on.
I mean,
so let's see.
So a cheaper knockoff version of a show that ends up surpassing the original higher priced version.
Oh, I don't know.
I actually couldn't think of any, to be honest. I tried to think of other shows that are in that same vein. Like I thought of sci-fi shows because sci-fi does this a lot.
Right.
But I can't think of one that was better.
Like there's shows that come out at the same time doing the same thing, like when they had Once Upon a Time and Grimm.
Yeah.
They're kind of the same type
same
of
general
thing,
vibe, yeah.
But
yeah.
Or like anything when Lost was on with any of those shows. I mean, I don't know. That
Man,
was
I thought Other Space, which seemed like kind of a cheap, hokey Lost in Space kind of thing, was better than what I remember of Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Lost in but there's such different.
It wasn't comedic, I guess.
Yeah,
as much.
And it was such different times. I mean, Lost in Space came out in the '60s.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I don't know what would be the more expensive equivalent of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Other space that might.
I don't know. I can't think of one at all. That's a good question.
Yeah, I can't either.
It stumped me.
I've also stumped on this one. I don't have any answers.
And then you're also trying to like, okay, what's a cheap show?
Yeah.
That does a good example.
Well, I mean, it's not as much anymore, but Always Sunny is a cheap show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's better than like say Seinfeld or one of those that it's doing. It's just different.
I would say.
I think Seinfeld's better.
I mean, I think Always Sunny was able to borrow. I mean, it's kind of unfair because they're able to borrow off of what you're already used to and then skew it.
Yeah.
And then skewer it.
Well, then, a cheaper show? I mean, Curb, but it's the same guy, so you can't, you can't even use that.
And I never know the budgets on HBO.
Yeah.
Like, everything looks slick.
Super expensive.
But I don't know if they're also able to do it fairly cheap.
Cheaper. I'm trying to.
I don't know this one.
I was trying to equate something that maybe Louie, because initially, like, if we just go by the first season, where back in the 90s and even the early 2000s, where every comedian got a sitcom around their jokes, basically, which is basically Seinfeld, actually.
See, Louie is actually a good call,
But Louie, because of that.
But he took it all on himself.
Yeah, the first season, because he did everything himself and he had a certain amount of money. Maybe in that vein. I mean, but I can't put it to against one show particular. I could say one style of show, yeah. Maybe Louis. But then, and I only count that first season because it was a total surprise, super cheap, and I think he got more budget for his later shows anyway. So maybe that's it.
All right. Well, I got another interesting question here from Jabril Mahmoud.
You guys
says,
have been thinking a lot.
When did you realize that as a TV viewer, you were slumming it when watching network TV and that premium cable networks like HBO and FX produce more nuanced and cinematic content?
I will say since I was a kid, because I've had cable. I've had cable. I cannot. It's hard for me to remember life without cable now. That's how long I've had it. Like my love of TV comes from my mom. My mom and dad, two people, they have 7 TVs, like big screen TVs, all around the house.
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
I'm kidding. That's all.
But my mother watched television because my mother grew up in the South Side of Chicago in the ghetto. Very bad. I mean, every cliche ghetto thing happened to my mother in times multiplied times 10. She watched television because she loved Father Knows Best because she thought that's the. She said not everybody has to live like I do. So I'm going to look at Father's Know Best and try to, you know, do my life like that. So it was escapism for her.
Sure.
So as soon as cable got available, and it was like 80 or 81, and this was in suburban Chicago, I've had it. Like even with the brown box with like the 30 channels at the white little thing on top. Mm-hmm. So I've never not had cable. I mean, so.
I think for me, it was probably The Shield.
The Shield.
That was the start of it. Not, but by the time when I actually like basically started saying, oh well, if it's on network, I'm not interested as much.
Oh,
That is probably more recent. That is probably down to, that's fairly rare. That might be like Game of Thrones.
Oh,
and
no.
All that kind of stuff.
Like, see, I remember Oz being a big pivotal point for me, and then like Sopranos, like with just like HBO. Wow, you're really turning it on. But well, I mean, HBO's always been prestige, and it just seemed unattainable.
Well, and remember when Sopranos was running, so was West Wing.
What made the big switch for me was AMC coming seemingly out of nowhere and hitting up with two big shows, Breaking Bad and AMC.
Yeah.
Because when they did that, it suddenly made me like take real note of what FX was doing,
right,
and what HBO and Cinemax and Showtime were all like. All of a sudden, all of those were just starting to blossom. But it seemed like AMC doing that like just kind of paved the way for going, oh wait, it like because Lost was still my favorite show.
Yeah.
In addition, like you said, West Wing.
That's what I was going to say. Is the flip side isn't when did the cable shows start being so awesome?
It's one
of the network shows, and I think it might have been the end of Lost. Like after Lost, what network show has been as consequential?
We can still stick with comedies and say The Office and Parks and Rec and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Sure. Parks and Rec was great, but Parks and Rec was an anomaly, and so was Community. And we were still watching cable more. We knew that the network was not doing what they were supposed to be doing.
I can go really old school with this. Because, like, no, because...
Remember Dream On and Arliss?
No, actually, Bizarre. Do you guys ever know that show? But it was on Showtime. Again, shows you how much TV I've had. Bizarre was where Super Dave Osborne came from.
Yeah.
And I never laughed. There are three moments in cable that said, oh, I just got to watch cable all the time, was when Eddie Murphy Comedian came out in HBO, and he showed it like twice, and that was it. And this is before YouTube, and they were running everything.
Yep.
That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life the first time. Bizarre with Super Dave Osborne, I used to wet my pants laughing so hard. And I never saw anything so funny. Even this is like during Cosby Show, all that stuff in the late 80s. And then
Greg suffered incontinence during that point.
And then, quite frankly, to be 100% honest, Cat People, which is the first time I ever saw naked boobs on my own television. So the fact that I could watch nude stuff
right
on
my
TV.
When did you go off network TV to some
off
extent?
Off network TV?
Yeah.
Totally?
Not totally, because you still watch some network TV.
Yeah, I still watch Law
and
Order.
But I think all three of us would agree with the premise that basically we will favor cable shows over network shows.
Actually, when I went back to college because it was we didn't have a DVR. I didn't have a DVR.
We didn't even have FX. I mean, it was only HBO that you had then, right?
No. Well,
and HBO was like such a premium.
No,
there wasn't like anything interesting on cable itself, right?
What do you mean, like in the
yeah? Were you 80s? Like, oh man, I only watch Comedy Central shows now because that's, no, that's only a good well, thing.
No,
on cable.
I'll tell you what it was, and it was a logical thing for me because I was in school, so they still had appointment television, and I wasn't using VCRs. I didn't have, like I said, like a DVR or yeah. TiVo at the time. Yeah. It was because cable kept rerunning the same stuff, so I could catch it another time. Yeah. So it's like, oh, shit, I missed this. So like, I started watching The Wire because they're running it all it the time. On, yeah. I was like, oh, I missed this episode. They're going to run it again. So I started going to cable because I know if I missed it this first time, they'll show it tomorrow at this other time or whatever. So okay. it was more of like I wasn't just stuck with – you know, let's say I miss Law and Order, and I got to wait till the summer comes up to watch the rerun of it or something. So really, it's because of the way they scheduled.
But Greg, of the three of us, do you think you're the most on the still on network a little bit? Because you still watch like
oh yeah,
you'll watch
definitely Blackish,
Nashville, Blackish.
No, wait,
watched Nashville for
I
a did, while.
I watched Nashville. I watched The Good Wife.
Big Bang Theory.
No, it wasn't that bad.
Two Broke Girls.
I still watch Network News. So yeah. So yeah.
There you go.
No, I still watch it because it's like comfort food. So.
Yeah.
All right, last question, guys. Then we gotta move on to our shows. Daniel Wallace says, "Do you have any series that are your go-to binge watch while recovering from like the stomach flu?"
Oh,
he says for him it's Scrubs.
Yeah, Scrubs is a good rewatch. When I'm laid up, Cheers is definitely one. That's my comfort TV.
Cheers.
Comfort food TV, definitely.
Mine is Arrested Development.
Yeah.
I can go back to it anytime. Yeah. I love this show.
Mine's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It's got to be comedy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Comedy, I mean, when you're laid up, it's you don't want to make the big investment like watching The Wire again.
I mean, I did. Yeah. I did watch when I was doing chemo and stuff, I sometimes watch like Alias.
Yeah.
I'd get into stuff that I was going to watch for a while.
Okay, yeah.
But that's different than when you have a stomach flu and you're going to be down for a day or two.
Yeah.
Now, when it's going to be a long term, you may do a drama. But if it's just a day or two, you got to go comedy.
You go comedy. I mean, it's different than rewatching something because you're like on a trip or something. But comedy. So Curb for me. Was cold like she stood so still. She threw me to the ground. She bruised my heart and bruised my shirt. From stirrup to saddle, I mounted again. And on my ten toes, I rode over the plain. And not in one town, not a soul would look out. Not a soul would look out. Not a soul would look down. Not a soul would look out. Not a soul would look down.
All right, so we got some news, not a ton, but the Super Bowl was on.
Oh, really?
And
was it super boring?
And there was a Wire reunion.
Oh, this is I
of sorts.
Dude, I watched it the first time. I was like,
I knew it the first time.
Was it all those guys? Because I recognize one. Oh, wait, maybe those two of them.
Except for the fourth. I don't know who the fourth person was, but yeah, I immediately. But also because of the OJ thing, because Chris Bauer's in the OJ thing.
Yeah. Well, who's in it, Randy?
So, so Chris Bauer, James Ransom, and Pablo Schreiber, who you might know as Frank Sbotka, Ziggy, and Nick.
Yeah.
From The Wire Season 2.
Yeah. And does
they
it say
staged
who the fourth
a
guy
bank
was?
Robbery in Toyota Prius. No, they didn't mention him because who cares?
Yeah.
He wasn't in The Wire.
Yeah.
It just seems weird. I'm like, was this like some like sidekick dude that like didn't get like many lines?
Yeah, no, it was very strange because
why put the fourth guy in there?
Yeah, I don't know.
When they couldn't get Omar, I guess.
They needed to get White Mike. That's what they needed to get was the Greek would have been hilarious. But I don't know what the thinking was to get all those guys in it. I mean, it just seemed kind of. I didn't know
because Pablo Schreiber's doing pretty well.
Well, so is Chris Bauer. I mean,
Ransom. What's Chris Bauer in?
He's in the OJ thing. He's one of the cops in the OJ.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah,
with the mustache.
Yeah. But and he was in True Blood like for a long time. But yeah, it's really interesting because at first I thought, are they going to do some kind of Wire spoof? I'm like, wait, they can't because spoiler: one of them dies, the other one goes to jail, and the other one is witness protection. So I was like. how does that, how will they make that work? But yeah. I don't know. So it just was nice to see them on.
It was cool. That was a favorite commercial.
Out of all the commercials, I only like the two with the stars in them. I don't know the Anthony
that
Hopkins
and the T.G. Miller. Yeah.
Well, that was funny. That last.
Oh, you mean
line.
The Ryan Reynolds one?
No.
Wait, they all have stars in them.
I mean, okay, well, that last line was funny in the T.G.
T.G. Miller.
That was great with the there's a new movie, Boring, starring you, starting right now, whenever. I just thought that was funny. But no, the one with Anthony
Shock Top is disgusting beer.
No, I wouldn't know. But the Anthony who played Hannibal Lecter? Anthony, what's his name? Anthony
Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins. When he's just like, why would I do anything when he's
and he's like whoring out.
That killed me. That one and the Christopher Walken one. I thought I do with the sock, you know? I was just like,
it's so weird.
Yeah.
What was that monkey baby?
That was creepy.
Something monkey baby. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was monkey baby, puppy monkey baby.
We're talking about it, so I guess that's what they wanted.
Actually, the only reason why I know that is because I visited my wife's classroom today, and all the kids were talking, oh, monkey, it's a baby, because I had to bring Ellington.
Puppy,
it's a baby.
Babies.
It's puppy monkey baby.
Man,
like,
that,
what?
That's how it sells right
there.
Yeah. All right, what else we got?
All right, preacher casting. Mm. So Preacher is apparently going to bring in Odin Quincannon. Mm-hmm. Who is he's from like book five. He's really far into the series.
The meat man, right?
Yeah.
This guy, he's a meat salesman with some kinks.
So mm-hmm. apparently he's going to be in season one, and he's going to be played by Jackie Earle Haley, which is pretty good casting, actually.
Yeah, okay. Jackie Earle Haley, awesome.
He can definitely play that guy.
And that guy's so good.
Yep.
And everything. He really throws himself into
it. I'm still skeptical about Preacher. We did it for our book club for the store. We did Preacher Volume 1. I reread it. And the show is going to be nothing like this comic.
No.
Yeah, so we'll see if it's good.
We'll see what they do.
Apparently, there's an article on Screen Crush that says, is Agent Carter doomed, or is Agent Carter not? Yeah. Is Agent Carter officially doomed? Because Haley Atwell has taken a pilot at ABC. It is called Conviction. She plays the role of a Clinton-like family daughter forced into taking a job as the head of the Los Angeles Conviction. Oh, sorry, I nodded off because it's another fucking legal drama. And what a waste of Haley Atwell. But Agent Carter is a 10-episode series. It's a hiatus series, so I don't think this necessarily means it's doomed. The ratings aren't great. I would sure like there to be a season three because
I
think
wouldn't she be under contract to not do this unless it's it's not competitive?
No, because I'm sure season two's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
but it's a per season basis. It's not like unless she gets renewed.
I don't know.
She could have
gotten this in second position.
Yeah. You know,
whereas if they renew Agent Carter, that she can't do the show.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I don't know. I don't think this means anything other than Haley Atwell probably is thinking, I better line up another gig just in case.
Haley Atwell's agent is doing really well. I actually like Agent Carter.
I love Agent Carter.
I think he's going really well.
I love Haley Atwell. I would love to see her on a different show too. Yeah. I just not a fucking legal drama.
No, it's kind of ridiculous.
All right, what's the big
finally
news?
The exciting news? Star Trek, the one that's going to be on CBS All Access in 2017, has announced its showrunner, and that's Brian Fuller.
Oh.
I can't believe this. He's running American Gods for Stars.
Yeah.
To what extent? I don't know.
But I thought he was a shorter on that one, too.
How are all these guys doing this? Like, him and Noah Hawley is, show running.
Well, you know, the thing is, we know that American Gods is probably a 10-episode show.
Right.
Short
so
run.
He probably runs that, and then he comes to Star Trek.
Dude.
Yes.
Star Trek, Brian Fuller?
Yep.
I mean, that's nerd.
They pretty much got me. I when we talked about CBS All Access when it was announced, I said, "There's no who's going to pay for this. I'm not going to pay for this.
Yeah,
I'm going to pay for this. I mean,
yeah, dude,
I'm already buying Supergirl. So, and I've heard Limitless is good. So, you give me Limitless and Supergirl and Star Trek by Brian Fuller. Yeah, I'm
oh
in.
Oh my gosh,
fine.
What are you talking about? Network TV? This is crazy.
Yeah,
like Brian Fuller is. He's such a visionary, and he's got such a distinctive style.
Yep. Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of think of Star Trek as being a precious and fairly controlled property.
There's no way he'd take that job if that was the rules, though.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm wondering. I'm like, is he going to have the degree of flexibility that he had in Pushing Daisies, or at least in Hannibal?
Yeah.
You think so, huh?
Maybe. I think so.
Because that's why you get a Brian Fuller. Yep. You don't get a Brian Fuller and then tie his wings.
And think about it this way, too. Les Moonves, very smart guy. You know, they've got their retail broadcast TV, you know, the Big Bang Theory, blah, 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 all that stuff. But, you know, as he's kind of inching his way into niche, which he did probably with like Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
If he figures, man, I got to sell this online, this over the top thing.
Yeah.
And I know the type of people that are going to buy it.
Yep.
So I'm
Nerds.
Going to go all in on it, 'cause I got a lot of money, and everybody's, no matter how high artfalutin these people are, they still like getting paid. So I think it's a very, very smart
move. Like, who do nerds like? Yeah. Well, Joss Whedon's not going to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
He's too bitty.
And so he got to Brian Fuller and said, would you do it if I throw you all this money at you? And Fuller's like, well, my Hannibal money went away.
Yeah.
I like money. You guys are going to have an actual backing for this, unlike Hannibal, where you have to go overseas.
Yeah, right.
I love this quote right here. This is from Alex Kurtzman, who you might know from like Transformers movies.
Yeah,
like
he's Star one Trek of the movies. Big wigs that start running Star Trek.
He's going to be a series executive producer. He says of Fuller, bring Star Trek back to television means returning it to its roots. And for years, those roots flourished under Brian's devoted care. His encyclopedic knowledge of Trek canon is surpassed only by his love for Gene Roddenberry's optimistic future, a vision that continues to guide us as we explore strange new worlds. That's awesome.
Very good. Very well said.
So Brian Fuller ended up, he worked at Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And I guess a little bit in Voyager.
A little bit in Voyager until he hated it, apparently.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing that went around. This is more of the realm of rumor, but apparently in 2009, somewhere like that, 2012, a few years back, Brian Fuller said something like, if you ever wanted to run Star Wars or Star Trek, that he'd want Angela Bassett as his captain and Rosario Dawson as his first officer.
Ooh.
And I say Angela Bassett for Star Trek, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. She'll do it, too.
Yeah.
She would do it. I mean, I love her. She's not doing much now.
Rosario Dawson's probably free. I mean, she's just doing
Netflix. Yeah. Angela Bassett and Rosario Dawson both is fantastic, but Angela Bassett is the captain of a starship.
Yeah.
I will watch the hell out of that show with Brian Fuller running it.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So I don't know if that'll go anywhere, but there's a hashtag trending right now about Captain Angela Bassett. So.
Cool.
Well, Angela Bassett's maybe was started by. Her agent, you know, trying to get her on there.
Well, let's move in to talking about some of these TV shows.
Yes.
And the first one we're going to talk about is this little animated show that popped up over on HBO, of all places.
Yep.
Now, this one is called Animals. It is produced by the Duplass brothers?
Right, but they're not the main guys.
No, but the main guys that are doing it, I don't even remember
their
names.
Did you notice Animals? It's like lowercase with a period or something. It's like it's really weird. It's deliberately weird mumblecore animation type stuff.
Oh yeah, the animation is schlocky. It's just kind of phoned in. There's not much. It's just like picture frame, and it's all about the voice talent that they get behind it.
Creators are Mike Luciano and Phil Matariz.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know where you might know them from.
So you wouldn't know them from anything. Because Phil Matariz's IMDb page is 100 credits related to Animals.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And Mike Luciano's is a bunch of animated shorts.
Hmm. So in this first episode, we are following a little tale of these rats. A couple of buddy rats.
Right.
And their life. And it's kind of like they're anthropomorphized. They're talking about very human relationship things, except for with a little bit of an animal bent. So it's kind of it kind of reminds me of like BoJack Horseman, where they'll occasionally blur the lines of like what makes them an animal and what makes them human.
Yep.
And that has a lot of humorous elements for it.
Yeah.
And the voiceover talent that they have, obviously in this first episode, they're pulling a lot from the league.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jason Manzoukas, Katie Hazelton,
right.
Paul Scheer, Steve Zissis, it's Mark Duplass. It's the entire cast of the league.
Yeah, yeah. Rob Corddry, Matt Walsh are also in this.
The only one missing is
Steve Zissis.
Not Andre.
Ruxin.
The only one missing is Ruxin,
And what'd you guys think?
What the fuck was that? That's what I thought.
Well, it's funny because what's the actor's name who plays Raffy?
Jason Manzoukas.
Yeah, who's like the main crazy rat guy?
Yeah, Fink.
Fink. I felt like why am I watching the league with
with rats?
You know?
Yeah.
Because he was basically
Raffy. Filthy party dude. Yeah. Party rat.
It was disgusting. I don't know. I thought it was interesting, but I was more interested in trying to figure out who the voices were than the actual stories.
Well, I watched it on HBO.com online. They had the cast right below it.
Yeah.
So I was able to just go check and go, okay.
I was mostly wasn't bored.
No,
I don't think I'll ever watch another episode of this.
Oh, really?
No, not ever.
I found it kind of amusing. My main disappointment was in the animation style because it's so cheap. It seemed beneath HBO to put something. But it just didn't have the HBO stamp.
Well, I don't know.
But there's something
if you go
kind
to
cutesy about it.
Well, because if you go to
not cutesy.
Like two of my favorite cartoons, where the animation sucks on both of them. Life and Times of Tim and Dr. Katz.
Reminds me of Dr. Katz, kind of in these like little vignette aside that they had with both the bugs and with the horses. And
I also did not like Dr. Katz.
Yeah, I loved Dr. Katz.
I hated Dr. Katz. I didn't like home movies. I like this a lot more because it's not squiggle vision. Anyways,
Dr. Katz used to, because I just loved the bits of the like Ray Romano. That's when I first heard Ray Romano was on Dr. Katz, actually. But then I loved Life and Times of Tim, which was terrible animation, but it's just the interaction of the characters and obviously the situations they find themselves in. I don't know. It just, the whole thing about making babies and then also understand that rats have like babies all the time. And also,
and they age so quickly.
They age so quickly.
Within the lifespan of a party, you can be.
Yeah, having sex with the
best friend's daughter.
It's pretty weird. The gag that I liked was DJ Labrat.
That was hilarious.
By Nathan Fielder. Himself.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was
for
funny.
You, I guess.
And then we was looking for the money for the DJ, which is so funny.
And then
they had a little aside with the horses.
Horses were actually one of my favorite parts. The two guys, the two horses complaining about how police horses do all the real work and race horses. Like, I could do that. That's no big deal. That is the part that cracked me up.
That was pretty funny, too.
I don't know. I was kind of taken with all of it, but I think it's really a mindset thing. And this is not a show that's like a must-see for me right now.
Yeah.
It would be low on the totem, but I would still maybe go check it out here.
It's easy because it's a half an hour. And I like one of my favorite shows that's on right before it, Vice. I love Vice. So I'll probably just end up, because you need to watch, especially after this last episode of Vice, which was really difficult to watch.
You need to decompress.
You need to decompress because Vice will just, okay, you think, if you talk about the politics, you think what's going on in this country is bad. Watch Vice, and you actually feel like, you know what? Maybe Hillary isn't that bad. Maybe I could live underneath Donald Trump, only because I don't want to live in like where Boko Haram is like ruling everything. I mean, anyway. But Animals I thought it was okay.
Well, Greg, now that you brought up politics, I think this is as good a point as any to transition to our next show, which is Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
I missed it, so.
Grant, you don't like Sam B, as I understand it.
I like her in this. This was fantastic.
Did you? Okay, wow. I kind of thought you might hate it. I really loved this.
I fucking loved this first episode.
Yep.
And, okay, so
Is it weekly or is it nightly?
It's weekly.
Okay.
Which is good. Nightly would have been too much.
So I can catch up to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Samantha B, for anyone who isn't familiar, she is one of the alumni from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Yep. Right.
And she moved over to TBS, which is also the same place that we were just raving about having Angie Tribeca on their show. So like, whoa, TBS is kind of doing some new stuff. This is kind of interesting.
Right.
So she finally has her, I guess, political discussion show. It's a half hour?
It's a half hour.
And she came out strong in this episode.
I thought the first 5 or 10 minutes were a little rough, where she's doing like the little special, like the whole press conference thing with the witches, and then her turning to the screen and doing the witch voice. It was like there's a little bit of the going a little hard at it. And I was like,
there's a little gimmicky.
Yeah,
but
then once she settled in, I was on board.
But her voice and perspective.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, she's gonna come from a female perspective.
Yeah,
but. Sorry. I'm not really sure how much she's going to sell that or how much she's just going to kind of play into easy joke.
Yeah.
And no, she went for the jugular in a lot of stuff.
And
It was powerful stuff, and yet it was hilarious.
Yeah,
I thought she did such a great job balancing everything.
She said and did, the feminist perspective is important because she said and did some things that John Oliver couldn't do and get away with.
No,
that Noah, that Trevor Noah can't get it. There is definitely, she is using the voice that she has in a way that other people can't.
Yeah,
and I thought that was good. And she's also fucking hilarious.
Hilarious. Okay. Her writers that are helping her out. Yeah. Everything that she was doing was just like on point.
Yeah.
She was tearing into a lot of these political issues that, you know, we've been discussing on the Patreon exclusive.
Yes.
And just like really kind of getting to the heart of stuff and being tearing into both sides.
Yep.
Probably one a little bit more predominantly than other, obviously.
So here's my issue with it.
Okay.
Well, two. One is a real issue and one is a gripey first world issue. My first world issue is I like this show and I would like to watch it on my TV.
Yeah.
And it's on TBS.
Yeah.
Which means that and it's going to be a weekly show. So I'm not really sure how I'm going to watch it.
Oh, okay.
I can't like buy the season, I don't think.
You can keep using your parents' access to get it.
Yeah, but they don't have, I don't think there's an app on the, I want to watch it on TV.
No, there's an app. Oh, you mean there's not an app on like
There's not an app Apple. On like Apple TV.
Wait,
that I saw. Maybe
with TBS
maybe
like stepping up with their content. Maybe they'll have to make an app.
I thought they did.
See, I want TBS to make some kind of deal with Hulu or Netflix or somebody to get this stuff on the air.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, now I look. Samantha Bee Full Frontal Season 1 is on Amazon. You can buy a season pass. So I'll probably be doing that tonight.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and I'll probably go ahead and pick it up because it was a great first episode. My other issue, and it reminds me of the early John Oliver stuff, she sometimes seemed a little too gung-ho, like a little bit too nervous energy, please like me.
It's the first episode.
Again, it's exactly what happened with John Oliver, where I'm like, okay, that was good, but it reminded me a lot of The Daily Show. It does. It's like, it is, here's what The Daily Show with Samantha Bee would probably look like.
Well,
but that's where John Oliver started and very quickly became what it is.
Right.
And I see the same transformation happening with Samantha Bee.
I love that the format stuck to this. She's just going to talk the entire time. There's not going to be this unnecessary interview format where she's pandering to some celebrity.
I was glad there were no interviews.
There's not going to be a roundtable discussion, which I think is a big downfall of Larry Wilmore's show.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, forget about
that. I want to hear her perspective. I want her to really have enough time to go after these issues. And with only a half hour, I think that time is a lot more precious. Mm-hmm.
That's my other issue is, and I don't necessarily need more than a half an hour, but I feel like 35, 40 minutes, I would have liked a little more time. It felt a little like just as we were really getting into it.
Yeah.
It was over.
It would be kind of nice that we get,
I would love a little more time.
Yeah. If this show's able to break away from the TV format and give us a little extra, or maybe for people who watch online, you get a little bit of a bonus content. That'd
because
be great.
I'm looking at it right now, and here's the deal. It's 21 minutes.
Yeah.
That's really quick to get all that stuff done.
And yet, I think she did a great job balancing the time.
Sure, yeah.
Coming right out of the gate in her first episode and having such passion. A lot of my beef with Trevor Noah is that he was given the reins. He was given the keys to the kingdom, and basically it was like, you know what? You have all my writers, you have the staff, you have the format already set out for you. All you need to do is bring the same heart and passion to this.
Yeah.
And he ends up playing softball with so many people,
he's bringing the outsider perspective, and that's good, but at the same time, the outsider perspective means that he still feels like on the outside, like none of this matters to him.
Yeah, yeah. The stakes aren't there for him. I want anger.
If the GOP gets elected, he can be like, okay, I'm done, I'm going back to South Africa.
He literally can leave this country. Yeah. But I think that was a mistake. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what happened with like all the talent. Like, if you know you have John Oliver and Samantha Bee that kind of ready to go, they didn't let them do
Samantha
it?
Samantha Bee should have had The Daily Show. Yeah. And if they weren't going to give us Samantha Bee, they should have given it to Jessica Williams.
Yeah, because...
And I say this as someone who's still watching and still likes Trevor Noah.
It's just an odd choice. Not that seems to be a bad fit.
I still say he's okay.
He's fine.
It's just obviously he's not that same caliber, and the show isn't the same right now. And it could have been handed off to someone else that would have carried that same torch.
It's a uniquely American show. It really is. And you need it, like, I don't want to be jingoistic or anything, but it's like you have to be like, it's better to have an American who understands how fucked up our politics are.
Well, also, I would have loved an outsider perspective if it was like John Oliver and he's still like called bullshit when he sees bullshit.
Yeah, that's true.
Just seems like he's more like it, like voyeuristic. Like, oh, look at this kookiness.
How are you guys doing that?
That's weird.
Yeah, there's
rather than being like, no, that's fucking bullshit.
There's not as much investment. And that's the thing. Like, on that show, you've still got like Roy Wood Jr. And Hasan Minhaj and Jessica Williams. I feel like they're all still invested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Trevor Noah is taking it lighter. And now that may be 100% deliberate on the point of Comedy Central. Maybe they felt like John's confrontational style was turning off a conservative audience that might have watched The Daily Show. But I don't think that's
true. They're too far gone. I don't think they're going to come back for Trevor Noah.
I don't think so either. But we're in an election season, and one of the things that keeps me sane in election season was Jon Stewart. So I'm glad that Samantha Bee is going to be there to fill that role.
Yeah. And John Oliver's about to be back.
John will be back, and that's good.
He's going to.
Nobody's doing it daily, but the two of them doing it weekly means 2 weeks.
Yes. That's
a start.
A little bit better.
So if you could get Jason Jones to do something maybe for a week.
Mm-hmm. And you just watch the first part of Larry Wilmore show.
Yeah.
You'd be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say I haven't watched Larry Wilmore show in a while because it just time-wise fell off. But I feel like Larry Wilmore's panel thing was an interesting thing that should work.
Right.
But I think the whole thing needs to be it needs to be entirely a panel show, and it probably needs to be about 45 minutes and a little more. They need to really get into the topic.
It needs a panel show without commercial breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, it needs to be that, hey, this is going to be nonstop. It's going to be relentless, and you guys really got to bring it.
I don't know why somebody else doesn't challenge Bill Maher.
Yeah.
Because Maher is now...
is getting more and more like old and cantankerous.
He just hates everybody and everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can't... So he probably needs to go.
Yeah.
And I say this as a liberal who agrees with well, I would say maybe used to be like maybe 60% of what he says.
The percentage is definitely
now shrinking. It's more like 30% of what he says.
Yeah,
but he still has a really good way of getting people on the show to say stupid things, which is really kind of cool. But you know, if somebody just put up any of these other political thinkers, like it's a round table, or Samantha Bee, or I mean, I'm surprised like Showtime doesn't do it or Cinemax doesn't do that.
It's just. Do you remember that Colin Quinn show?
Yeah.
Where they'd have the little round table thing?
Yeah.
It reminds me of that.
Yeah.
It just feels like a cheap, outdated 90s model that Larry Wilmore's doing, and I really hate it.
Yeah. You get kind of round tabled out because every show
like
does it.
I don't need everyone's voice.
Mm-hmm.
I need one powerful guiding voice because some people just are going to say stupid shit.
Speaking of. This is a little bit off topic, but have you guys watched The Circus at all?
No.
The Circus is a review show of the weekly politics that Showtime is actually doing with Mark Halperin, and I can't remember the other guy's name, but they both do like basically a PTI version of politics. They do it on Bloomberg. This is a review of the stuff they do on Bloomberg, which is actually really cool because they actually are in the campaigns and talk to people and they give their own opinions on it, but they actually will be interviewing like Ted Cruz or whoever. And it's a half an hour, easily digestible, kind of lets the candidates hang themselves with their own words and stuff, which is actually pretty cool. But that is like one of those shows that they're going to be doing it all the way until the election.
See, I think my biggest hang-up is always commercial breaks. I hate when you get a good flow going and something that you're discussing is interesting. And also, it's like, now we got to pay the bills.
Yep.
And with that said, we're going to have to go to a commercial break.
Hey, don't kid yourself.
Grant is the ad for Cocaine Wine.
Cocaine Wine. Yeah. All right. We're back. We're back. Hey. And we're going to talk about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, yes. That's awesome.
So we are in the 11th season.
Yes.
And
Cocaine Wine.
We might have already mentioned that with the premiere.
We talked about the first episode back.
Yeah. So we're about four episodes in.
Yeah.
And
there's no reason a show that has 11 seasons should still be this good.
It seems to get better. I don't even know how it does it.
It's not possible. I don't understand because the gang... I mean, we talked about the premiere episode. And that was really fun. And then Frank Falls Out a Window, which was full of callbacks to 10 seasons worth of inside jokes.
Yes.
And yet still somehow completely accessible and funny as hell. Like, that was funny. And then they did The Gang Hits the Slopes, which is the most perfect 80s movie, 80s ski movie knob so I've ever seen. Oh,
okay,
man.
Okay, there's a scene in there where Charlie has sex with a woman.
Yes.
And it's, like, fully gratuitous. Oh, my God. And it's like, okay.
It was amazing.
They could have gone for the joke.
Yep.
And they didn't. They just went, like, nope, now we're going to do full-on sex scene. Because, and, like, we're going to make this last about a minute of sex scene. And because that was uncharacteristic for the show.
That was so 80s, because that's what they would do. They do the sex scene where you can't actually see anything, where there's music playing.
It's all joke. Yes. And then it's like, whoa, they're really doing this. Yes. And, like, and Charlie Day, the actor, really commits to it.
Yes, he does. I also love the party guy turns out to be kind of a date rapist, which is such a great commentary in all those movies.
Yeah.
Like this, they talk about that's sort of a commentary on the Porky shower scene. He's like, it'll be even funnier when I put my dick in there. Yeah. And it's like, that's just straight up rape. That's rape. Yeah.
that's fucked up, dude. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was hilarious. The big reveal about Frank and what he was doing and that the girl was a prostitute. And Charlie's just casually like, oh, I guess I better go to the hospital too.
Get checked out.
Checked out.
So the next episode after that was D Makes a Smut Film.
Yes.
And some of these elements of this episode, I'm like, they're okay.
Yeah.
But what I loved was Dennis in this episode.
Yes.
And Dennis's erotic fiction.
When they get to Dennis thinking he's the man's man.
Yeah.
Dennis is...
he's just such a creep.
Dennis's version of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Was so hilarious. His a woman's mouth is not for speaking, is for a man to put his penis in.
Oh my God.
It's like that to Dennis, that was high art.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
And at the same time, wasn't this the episode where they were trying to convince was trying to convince the art gallery what art was?
Yeah.
Oh man. That was so hilarious.
And it turns out the art gallery lady was like bullshit.
Yes. I love when Mac and Dennis are trying to explain, like, because they think they're the geniuses. They're brains of the operation, and they're so stupid. And
well, no one's the brains of the operation. No. If anything, maybe what's his name? Frank
arguably, but Frank.
That's only if he chooses to channel it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's just the bit manipulator.
There were so many great gags in both these. I mean, honestly, Gang Hits the Slopes is as strong an episode as this show's ever done.
Mac and Dennis Move to the Suburbs is the most recent episode, and you haven't seen that, correct?
I haven't seen it yet.
It is fantastic. Yeah. It is a... It does a portrayal of how city people can't cut it out in the suburbs.
Right.
Because Mac and Dennis, they decide to move in the suburbs, and it just becomes this bleak crisis for them. And how they kind of portray this elapsed time of a month of them spending time here, and the drain it has on them, and how... like terrible they become to each other. I love it, and it was such a surprise. I like how they are able to do. I mean, The Gang Hits the Slopes was a fantastic episode, but it was also one where they kind of are doing a gimmick.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, anybody could watch that episode.
Yeah.
And not have to know the Always Sunny Inside Now stuff.
Right. Mac and Dennis Move to the Suburbs feel like it's within the continuum of the show and like everything it builds towards.
Right.
And It also feels like it does such a great job as this own standalone, and just really strengthens and pulls off of all the strengths of everyone else in the show.
Right, right.
I loved it. And, I mean, how many more episodes do we have? We have 10 episodes in this season, and they got renewed already for season 12. And maybe 13.
And 13, I think.
Yeah.
Jeez.
These guys just continue. Okay, let's read the titles of these other episodes.
Yep.
Okay, the next one's going to be Being Frank. Whatever. Oh, wait, I saw a preview for this. This is all going to be through Frank Vision. So it's going to be like you're seeing through his eyes a day in his life.
I don't know that I want to see that.
It looked fucked up. The Marine Ponderosa Wedding Day Massacre Defense.
Oh, my God. Whenever Marine Ponderosa stuff shows up, it's always good.
Charlie Catches a Leprechaun. The Gang Goes to Hell. And that's a two-parter. The Gang Goes to Hell Part 2.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, man. I'm so excited because this show, it's one of my favorite shows on TV.
Yeah.
And it's one of the best comedies, I think, out there.
It's been, there's no way a show this late in its run should be this good.
Yeah.
But it's every bit as good as it's always been.
And I imagine it's like the cast all still really gets along and they just love what they do.
Yeah.
So we have a bunch of other shows that we're gonna have to discuss next week, I guess.
Yes, I need to catch up on some stuff.
Not only do we have to catch up on stuff, but you're starting with Better Call Saul comes back.
Vinyl
comes back.
John Oliver comes back.
Walking Dead.
Well, okay. So there's no time to ever come back to like Billions and
probably not.
No, I'll watch them all.
And Mad Dog and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, we got so much.
And then the Walking Dead.
Oh, Greg.
All
right, guys. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Grant.
And thank you to the listening audience. Once again, we really want to ask you guys to go ahead and go over to iTunes and help give us a 5-star rating and review. That does really help us out. And there's also Patreon, but that's not as pressing. Mm-hmm. The one thing that, yeah, it really helps us out. Go to iTunes. Do it. What else? Is that it?
That's it.
I think that's it.
Like us on Facebook.
Yes.
Like us on Twitter.
Yes. Follow us on Twitter.
You know, tell us your thoughts. Yeah. Give us comments in the show. And until next week.
TV Dudes out.
TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.